So finally, Nityananda Prabhu was victorious. And she got deities of Gornitai. And she went out and she wanted to know what to do. She came to me, she said, I need to preach. Nityananda Prabhu wants me to preach. Nityananda Prabhu wants me to preach. But I don't know anything about preaching. I've been living on this farm covered with mud, doing pujari work and cutting wood and cooking for the last 10-15 years. What should I do? I said, I know exactly what you should do. We'll get you a van. And you start a women's party and travel to all these college preaching centers and preach to all the women and cultivate them and make them devotees. So she said, yes, I'm very enthusiastic. But she kept one of Balaram's shoes. And for her whole life, the shoe of Balaram was her pillow. It was a wooden shoe, too. She always slept her head on the shoe of Balaramji, wooden sandal, to always be in Balaram's service in the form of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. And I remember one time in, I think it was Cincinnati or Columbus, we were doing a Harinam and we had a book table and she had her, wherever we did anything, she would always set up her Gornitai deities, about this big. And the police came and arrested us. I was not there at the time because I would be traveling different places. But the police came to arrest, and Ladini, she said, you cannot arrest us without arresting them. She pointed to the deities. They said, they're those dolls? Arrest dolls? She said, no, they are not dolls. It is on their order that we are here chanting the holy names and distributing books and prasad. It is on their order. How can you arrest us without arresting them? And she spoke with such conviction. They said, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Arrest? They're not even people. She said, no, they are people. We are here under their order. You cannot arrest us without arresting them. So the police arrested the deities. And they took the devotees and the deities to jail for doing Harinam Kirtan without permit or something like that. And when they went to see the magistrate, she was saying the same thing. She was saying she brought the deities with her. She is under our order. They have ordered us. Krishna is your mother. Krishna is your father. Krishna is your life and soul. Krishna is your treasure. Chant Hare Krishna. Worship Krishna. Follow the teachings of Krishna. They have ordered us to give this message all over the world. We're helpless. Whatever your laws are, we cannot follow them. Because they have given us their instruction. And she spoke with such conviction that the magistrate, the judge, actually said, well, if you're following their instructions, then how can I arrest you? Just go out and follow their instructions. She didn't need a lawyer. She had her Gornitai as her advocate. This was her faith. But when I was there, you know, she was doing unbelievable. I'll tell you something about her. Her love for Krishna was so contagious that any female student or townsperson that I would connect to her, that person could not give up her association. They had to become devotees. They just wanted to help her in every way. They became blissful. She was just love of God personified. Amazing person. But then when I was sent to India and had to stay there, and later on New Vrindavan, they made many changes. There was no kirtans. There was no devotee dress. So many things. And she was so deeply immersed in Chaitanya Charitamrita and the traditions of Gaudiya Vaishnavism that these changes were breaking her heart. When I came, she was crying. She said, I can't stay here. I can't follow this. But I don't want to offend anyone. Please help me. So Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj came to New Vrindavan. And Fladini and I went to New Vrindavan. And he gave a class where he was talking about the incredible preaching he was doing in Africa. So about a week later, she asked me, do I have your blessings to go to Africa? Because there, I could just worship Lord Nityananda without all these restrictions. So I said, let us talk with Maharaj. So she drove her van, I drove mine. We met at the Institute for Applied Spiritual Technology, and the three of us met in Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's room. It was a very deep, wonderful talk. She practically didn't say a word. I had to do all the speaking. She was just sitting there with her tears in her eyes. And in the end, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj just, he said, this is the greatest benediction for Africa, to get a devotee like you. Is this really what you want? And then she said, Maharaj, please accept me as your servant. And she went to Africa. Now, should I tell you an interesting story about Fladini? She was superbly excellent at preaching to people one-on-one, but she had never given a class in her life. She always longed to go to Vrindavan. So one time I arranged for her to come to India. And we took her to Vrindavan, Govardhan, Parikrama, Barsana, Nandagaon, so many places. She was intoxicated with spiritual love the whole time she was there. It was amazing to see her. And then we brought her back to Bombay. And at that time, Radha Gopinath Temple was just a little dungeon downstairs with rats and roaches and so-called brahmacharis. And we weren't even allowed to come at that time. Brahmacharis didn't like us. You remember? So we were having our Bhagavatam classes at Srinathji Prabhu's house. So one day I asked Fladini that you please give class today. And she just froze like a statue. She said, no, I've never given a class. I cannot give a class. No, I will not give a class. And I said, Fladini Devi, please give Bhagavatam class. They would love to hear from you. She said, these are all civilized, cultured people, and I'm like an animal. I'm a beast. How can I give class to them? I have no qualification. I don't know the philosophy. This is the one thing I cannot do. I will not give class. She said, I'll leave this place if you make me give class. I can't do it. I won't do it. I said, all right, I'll give class. So we were all sitting. There was about 20, 25 devotees gathered in Srinathji Prabhu's living room at Seaface Park. And I chanted Jai Radha Madhava, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Read the Sanskrit, the verse, the purport. And then I said, and now Fladini Mataji will give class. And I got up and walked right out. And she said, no, no, no. And I just kept walking and I closed the door and I locked the door. So she and just went out of the house and went down the stairs and she couldn't find me. And meanwhile, she was sitting there and the devotees put the book in front of her, put the microphone in front of her. Now what could she do? She started speaking. A few minutes later, I came back up the stairs and I opened the door a little crack so she wouldn't see me to listen. And she was preaching. Magnificent class. She was preaching with such enthusiasm. At the beginning, she was just, for the first 10 minutes, she just apologized for not being qualified. And then she gave about a 2-hour class. And the devotees were enthralled. They were spellbound. And after that day, she never stopped giving Srimad Bhagavatam classes. So when she went to Africa, soon she was leading Harinam Sankirtan parties and getting hundreds of little African kids to dance and chant, just what she loved to do. She was cooking prasad and distributing it to them. She was really a mother. She was giving fantastic classes to the devotees, and soon she was on television, radio, magazines, newspaper interviews. Practically every day she was a media sensation. Heads of state, government officials were coming to take shelter of her. She was doing unbelievable preaching. She was totally fearless. And it was Bhaktitirtha Swami Maharaj's inspiration. They had such a deep connection. Anyways, it's a long story. But after some years, there was a political takeover in Liberia, where she happened to be preaching. And her and about 8 other devotees were killed. They were shot dead. What happened is they invaded this gangster mob that took over the government, raided the temple in the middle of the night, and lined up all the men to kill them, and told Ladini, because you're a woman, we're not going to harm you. You can go. But they shot one of the devotee men, and she couldn't tolerate it. A few weeks before this incident, she wrote me a letter. And she said, the only thing in life that I fear is offending a Vaishnav. There's no other fear I have in life. And she was telling me about the life and death situation in Liberia. When they started shooting devotees, she cried out, you cannot do this. You cannot kill devotees. And she literally, there was military people with guns all around, rifles, and the leader was shooting with a pistol. She ran right up to the leader and grabbed his arm so he couldn't kill the devotees. She said, you cannot do this. You cannot do this. She knew that she would be killed. She literally, physically grabbed the hand of the president of the nation who took over the government, for he wouldn't shoot the devotees. And they just aimed their guns at her and killed her. She would rather die than stand idly as devotees were being killed. That was her integrity. Bhaktitirtha Swami Maharaj had such deep gratitude, appreciation for Ladini. Their relationship on a totally, purely spiritual level was something extraordinary. After she passed away, Maharaj told me that in previous life she had male body, and they were both devotees, and they were most intimate, loving friends, like brothers. He said that our relationship is so deep on such a spiritual platform that goes back to previous births. Maharaj, should I continue? It's getting late. If you want to take prasad, please go. If you want to hear about Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, you will be much more benefited. Because Prasad will be there till any time. While he was doing these heroic devotional deeds in Prabhupada's service in Africa, at the same time, he was developing one of the most successful projects in the world in the capital of America, Washington, D.C. The Institute of Applied Spiritual Technology was reaching so many people. Maharaj was having classes at, I believe it was Howard University. A very highly esteemed educational institute in Washington, D.C. Maharaj was such a compassionate person. To be a preacher, it's not just a matter of speaking philosophy. It's a matter of transforming people's hearts, awakening love of God in people's hearts, getting people to be deeply attached to the association of devotees and the holy name of Krishna. Now, Srila Prabhupada, when he came to America, he saw so many millions of innocent souls who are part and parcel of Krishna, who were being cheated and exploited by Maya. We have to save them. Prabhupada made many adjustments in the presentation of Krishna consciousness to reach the people according to Kaladesha Patra, the time, place, and circumstance, but without ever changing the message. So Maharaj saw in the 1980s, it wasn't like the 60s and 70s, there wasn't many people joining the movement. We had to somehow or other reach them in a way that was relevant to their interest. So he explored grounds that were very interesting. He targeted which types of people are going to be most inclined to accepting Krishna consciousness. So he was giving seminars and lectures, appealing to the New Age people. He was giving lectures from a point, Krishna consciousness from the point of view of psychology, psychiatry, conflict resolution, politics. He was giving lectures on UFOs, unidentified flying objects. All these various occult subjects. He was reaching people's hearts. And it was considered controversial. We don't accept these things. But what was the result? The result is he would gain people's confidence. He would gain people's love. And then he would gradually train them in Krishna consciousness. He was getting PhDs, doctors, psychologists, professors. They were chanting 16 rounds. They were following the regulative principles. They were scrutinizingly studying Prabhupada's books. They were sold out to the mission of ISKCON. They took initiation. The most qualified devotees in all of America, most all of them, were becoming Krishna conscious by the incredible efforts of Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj. Now, some of the things he's done has been criticized and controversial. But I can tell you, from my deep conviction, whoever criticizes simply does not understand the compassion and broad-mindedness of this personality. When I was at Gita Nagari, I was seeing qualified, intelligent people that came from those innovative, creative indirect preaching programs. They would have never, ever, ever associated with devotees any other way. And now they are full-fledged, perfectly cultured, wonderful Gaudiya Vaishnavas. You could judge a thing by its result. You can judge a tree by its fruit. It was his deep compassion to reach people's hearts that he approached people in such incredibly genius ways in the Western world and brought them to the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada and Gaur Nitai, where they surrendered. Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj Ki. Meanwhile, we are still meeting every year, several times. And we'd sit at the table and eat, and we'd lay on the floor and we'd walk and we'd talk, and we'd sit and we'd talk. But we talked. Because whatever was building up in my heart, I had to save for Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. And same for him. It was a beautiful relationship. And one of the things, every time we met, one of the things we always discussed for at least a half hour was the amazing grace that we both had that we never got malaria. Because in India, so many people get malaria. And in Africa, so many people get malaria. And he would always say, I've been in Africa for so many years, every devotee gets malaria, I never got malaria. And I said, I've been in India so many years, so many devotees get malaria, I never got malaria. So that, we always discussed. For about 8 years we discussed this malaria subject. And I can tell you that both of us were developing some pride. There was a certain pride of never getting malaria. Because what else can someone like me get proud of? Anyways, 1 year, I got malaria. Dwarkadish Prabhu, Dr. Alawa can tell you all about it. It was so severe. I had fever and I was sweating and they gave me medicine, and every time they gave me medicine I would vomit it up. They brought me to hospital before there was a Bhaktivedanta, some other hospital. And they had to give me intravenous and injections to try to somehow or other relieve this malaria. And the whole time I was there I was thinking, how am I going to explain this to Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj? I'm a traitor. To my great surprise, the next time we met, he told me, Maharaj, I have a confession to make. I said, what? He said, I got malaria. We exchanged notes. And it turned out we both came down with the fever at the same day, at the same time. And we were both admitted to hospital on the same day, at the same time, in the same year. He was in Africa, I was in India. And we were probably bitten by mosquitoes at the same time, too. But we were both rejoicing. Let's just see our connection. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj traveled all over the world. His enthusiasm, his determination, and his compassion was unlimited. Wherever he went, he would mesmerize devotees' hearts. He would melt their hearts. He was so personal in his concern for everyone. because he came from a minority family and he was persecuted his whole youth. He had a very soft heart and sympathy for any devotee who was being mistreated. He had this nature where he never judged anyone. He was everyone's well-wisher and friend, whatever their condition. And with this spirit, he traveled around the world preaching the pure message of Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada. His kirtans were famous throughout the 14 worlds. There was no one who danced like him. He could dance hour after hour after hour after hour. He was in his late 40s and then in his 50s. And still, he would never stop. He had such a spontaneous taste for the holy name. I remember when he was a brahmachari, devotees used to come and tell me at New Vrindavan that there is this brahmachari named Ghanashyam. We've never seen anyone chant japa like him. He'll just sit right in front of Prabhupada, intensely chanting the holy name with such intensity. He really was addicted to the holy name. He never missed his rounds his whole life after took initiation. If he had to stay up all night, if he had to do anything, but never would he give up his vow of chanting. And for him, minimum 20 rounds a day, but usually 42. His sadhana was so deep and so powerful, so exemplary. His kirtans were with so much enthusiasm. I remember one year he came to Radha Gopinath temple and he led Mangal Arati, and before they even lit the incense, everyone was dancing in ecstasy. Do you remember that? And they didn't stop dancing. And after the conch shell blew, they're still dancing. Running all over the temple, running back and forth in circles everywhere for Mangal Arati. He was simply spontaneously intoxicated with the holy name. And he would play that drum with that stick. You have seen, ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. Sometimes his disciples talk to me and I say, Prabhu, you have to talk louder because I've been at so many kirtans with your guru's drum that I... Yes. In Mayapur Dham, during the GBC meetings, he was one of the highlights of the whole world's hearts, is to participate in Bhakti Tirtha Swami's dancing kirtans. And his lectures, so brilliant, so to the point, always relevant to devotees' lives. He didn't just speak theory. He spoke the pure Siddhanta of Gaudiya Vaishnavism in a way that really is what devotees needed to hear, according to their problems, according to their consciousness, according to their struggles, according to their inspirations. It was unbelievable. He was such an inspirational speaker. I believe the most powerful speaker of ISKCON. He would just get so absorbed in what he was saying. I'll give you one example. During the international festival in Mayapur, he was giving a lecture the last day of the GBC meetings. Over 1,000 devotees all over the world assembled in the Panchatattva temple, and Maharaj was speaking. And he was speaking about dedication to Srila Prabhupada, loyalty to ISKCON, surrender to Krishna. And he was speaking with such power, his voice was just tumultuously echoing in all directions. His body was just expressing his heart's compassion and devotion, and it became just to such a summit that at a certain point in his lecture, devotees were just at the edge of their seats. And all of a sudden, his watch flew off his wrist.
His coat flew off his body and his hat just flew into the air.
And these sannyasis sitting next to me looked at me and went, "Wow, I've never seen anything like this." Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj Ki. He was enthusiastic, determined, and convinced. His lectures transformed people's hearts. He wrote over 20 books that were published. And these books, he wrote them in such a way, many of them were not just for devotee audience, but for the general population, targeting at people who could be very potentially very receptive to Krishna consciousness. He wrote books focused on the problem of sex passions, the problem of terrorism, the problem of war, the problem of suicide, the problem of poverty, the problem of mental disease and depression. Things that are relevant to people's lives all over the world. He was addressing them from a spiritual perspective and giving people Krishna consciousness. An intelligent class of people all over the world. His books have been translated in how many languages? Probably about 20 or 30 languages in the world. I don't know. I think 20 languages. And people who would otherwise never come near an institution of religion, what to speak of a religion like the Hare Krishna movement in the West, were reading his books, opening their hearts. Their hearts were transforming, and many people were becoming devotees, either directly or indirectly. Amazing. And he was doing something that practically, besides Jamuna Mataji, I don't know anybody else who has Jamuna Prabhu's cookbook was the number one cookbook in the whole world. And she was going on tours of the world signing and giving lectures on cookbooks in bookstores. Besides Jamuna Prabhu, I think Bhakti Tirtha Swami is the only other person who had this incredible, empowered opportunity. With many of the books that he wrote, he was going on tours throughout America in the major established bookstores, giving seminars and signing his books and being promoted by the book publishing companies. And while he was doing that, according to his writings, according to his incredible connections with people in high places, wherever he went in the world, whether it was Russia or Africa or America or South America or Australia or Europe, he was on television stations, he was on radios, he was in the media. He was just such a fascinating, incredible person. He was giving seminars to devotees all over the world. They were the most popular seminars. He would usually give seminars on subjects that he really felt the devotees needed to hear to be happy and stable in Krishna consciousness. I remember just a couple years ago in Divnomorsk, Russia, the festival, there was 4 to 5 seminars going on simultaneously. And most all the major leaders of ISKCON from all the world were there giving seminars. But by far, his was the most popular. In his seminar, he had at least 3,000 Russian devotees sitting in rapt attention for 2 hours at a time every day. He was on the main morning television show in Russia, in Ukraine, in Latvia, in so many other countries, meeting with big, big, powerful people. He was doing a type of preaching that no one else in the world within the Krishna consciousness movement could do. Why? What was the source of his empowerment? Every day he was writing his diary, praying to Prabhupada. Na janam na janam na sundarim kavitam vaja kadisha kamaye mama janmani janmanishwari bhavatad bhakti rohaita kitvai. This was his spirit. I do not want money. I do not want sex. I do not want wealth. I do not want fame. I do not want liberation. I only want to serve you. I only want to serve Srila Prabhupada by expanding his glorious mission of compassion. Because he begged for service, he was given such extraordinary service. Empowered. A few years ago, I was in Gitanagari with him. At that time, we got the news that one devotee had committed suicide. Forgive me if I'm speaking something improper, but it does show the nature of his compassion. The devotees couldn't understand why this initiated devotee would do such a thing. It was a mystery. What happened is the sister of this devotee, she understood the open-hearted, compassionate nature of Bhakti Tirtha Swami. She opened up to him and she sent a message to Bhakti Tirtha Swami that my brother, just a few days before he took his life, wrote to me and told me that he's homosexual. But he was a devotee. And the Krishna conscious philosophy does not accept illicit sex, and homosexual sex can only be illicit. So he didn't see how he could fit in the society, but at the same time he didn't see how he could leave the society, because he firmly believed in Krishna. So he decided to take his life. Nobody even knew what was in his mind. He kept it all secret. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj and I had a very deep and long discussion when he received this message from the sister. He was so deeply concerned. He said, "We don't accept homosexuality. It's not acceptable in our culture or philosophy. But Prabhupada says you hate the disease, not the diseased. The problem is if these people are not respected, if they're condemned, then either they're going to leave Krishna consciousness altogether and never get purified, or they're going to do what this person has done, which is the absolute worst thing." He's saying whatever a person's sins may be, whatever a person's nature may be, we may not accept that, but they should be encouraged and respected as human beings, Vaishnavas, and given the chance to be Krishna conscious. And he was just struggling in his mind how to do this, how to make this balance. And there were some people, even leaders of ISKCON, who very much criticized him. Not high leaders, but somewhat, who criticized him. He's sympathetic toward this type of irreligious activity. But they didn't understand at all his spirit. His heart. He was simply compassionate to the spirit's souls. Whatever a person's habits, whatever a person's nature, whatever a person's problems, if we want to elevate them, they have to be encouraged to go on being Krishna conscious. this was the nature of his compassion. And he actually really tried to, in many cases, people with that and different types of problems, drug addicts, alcoholics, homosexuals, people with all kinds of different habits and natures and problems, they were coming to Bhakti Tirtha Swami. He didn't encourage them to do what they were doing, but he showed them love and respect and wanted to help them to overcome their problems, overcome their nature and become Krishna conscious. And he became a shelter for so many people like that. That was just his nature. To be loving, compassionate, and respectful to every living being. Maharaj gave shelter to so many people. The African people, especially in some places, are still considered minorities and not treated proper respect. Thousands of African people in Africa and all over the world. Prabhupada disciples, disciples of other gurus, and hundreds, his own disciples, they found shelter in him. They found a hero in him. They felt Krishna's love in him. Alienated devotees, many devotees who are Prabhupada's disciples who have been alienated from our mission, and other second generation devotees, I believe more than anyone else, their trust and their faith in Bhakti Tirtha Swami brought them closer and gave them shelter. Many Gurukulis, the Gurukulis are the young generation who were born in our movement and who went to the Gurukula. He gave so much of his time, so much of his energy, so much of his heart's love to help them, to inspire them, to respect them, encourage them, and to nourish them with pure bhakti. In fact, recently, I was at an assembly of people from the Gurukula, and they all together, they made a very beautiful statement. Shall I tell?
No.
They said, "We are from the Gurukula, and we know that Bhakti Tirtha Swami is a cool guru." We are from Gurukul, and we know that Maharaj is a cool guru. They loved him. Perhaps the most popular leader of ISKCON to the Gurukulis. Yes. We find in Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj the most transcendental story of rags to riches. Starting with nothing and not even a hope or a chance and becoming a world leader. This little black African boy in the ghettos of Cleveland from a broken home, didn't even have a father, hardly any clothes or food to eat, violent crimes all around him, stammering, couldn't even talk properly, people, even his own people, laughing at him and ridiculing him. What chance did that little boy in the ghettos of Cleveland have to succeeding in life? And some years later, author of 20 books, bookstore, darshans, television, international leaders, UN consultant. When I was at Gita Nagari, I saw devotees from South America, from North America. I saw devotees from Australia, from India, from every country, Italy, France, England, from Russia, from Africa, every continent in the world, there were devotees who were taking shelter of him, who were surrendering to him, as the topmost inspiration of their lives. What an incredible story of success. And it all came about by his sincere prayers for devotional service. In 2004, he was at the peak of his career of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. He was at the summit of his career of affecting people's lives in such a deep way. He wrote a Vyas Puja offering to Srila Prabhupada. In that Vyas Puja offering, please do read it. He prayed to Prabhupada that I wish that I could say everything is so wonderful. But the fact is, as I travel around the world, I see there are many devotees who are struggling with bad habits of the past, many obstacles and anartas in their hearts, many bad habits. Many devotees in this world, they're not able to maintain spiritual standards and they're feeling very sorry. There's depression. He could not tolerate seeing devotees suffer. He was giving seminars, he was preaching, he was giving kirtans. He was personally counseling anybody that would come to him. That year he traveled to 32 countries. It was a victorious tour. But he said, still, devotees need help. Therefore, he prayed to Srila Prabhupada, let me take the spirit of Vasudeva Datta and let me suffer. And let my, if you so desire Prabhupada, if you so desire Krishna, let me suffer and let my suffering remove the obstacles so that devotees could have a happy life in Krishna consciousness and go back home, back to Godhead. He offered this prayer from his heart. Soon after, he was diagnosed with melanoma cancer. A cancer that, by clinical analysis, is not possible to cure. According to the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Vasudeva explains, and Prabhupada confirms, that it is the duty of a person to try to protect his life, because God has given us this body. It is our duty, according to the need, to try to sustain and maintain this body, especially when it's being utilized in such valuable service to Krishna. So he tried many cures. He went to Mexico, Arizona, Hawaii, with various natural methods, allopathic methods. But ultimately, it was understood that it could not be cured. During the process, the doctors felt if he amputated one of his legs, that would remove the cancer. So he had a major surgery and amputated his leg. Can you imagine what a sacrifice that was? That most graceful, divine dancing leg being cut by a surgeon's saw. But even after that, it had already spread throughout his body. Please listen carefully. He was such in a spirit of service. And a devotee sees everything as an opportunity to serve. He decided that to take this whole dying experience and share it with the world in a totally positive Krishna conscious spirit. And he wrote his last book, Die Before Dying. An amazing book. An amazing book that teaches his real, that where he shares his realizations and experiences of going through the transformations of death and dying in a perfectly Krishna conscious perspective. When he saw that he didn't have much time to go, many devotees were making arrangements for him to go to Vrindavan to leave his body. Other devotees were calling him to Mayapur to leave his body. Because to leave your body in the holy dham is considered supremely auspicious. But please hear, my brothers and sisters, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaja's faith in Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada said that all of his centers were none different than Goloka Vrindavan. Because the selfless, unconditional service of Radha and Krishna is taking place there. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj wanted to spread the glories of Prabhupada's message even in his dying. He decided that he would leave his body in Gita Nagari. Why? Because he wanted to make a very strong statement to the world that wherever Prabhupada's centers are, because of Prabhupada's mercy, that is a holy dham. And that is a holy place fit to die and go back home, back to Godhead. In going to Gita Nagari, he was showing his faith, his love, and his intense desire to glorify the mercy of Srila Prabhupada's compassion. Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj ki. He said, Srila Prabhupada came to Gita Nagari and made it a holy place. His lotus feet stood here. Therefore, for me, it is Vrindavan. Such a wonderful realization. This year, I returned to New Vrindavan in the month of May. From this part of the story, I'm going to share with you my own personal experiences in relation to Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. Many of these stories are very deeply personal to me. Some are too personal for me to speak. Do I have your permission? Without details, New Vrindavan was going through a very difficult transition in management. And it was very much affecting the community. there was certain blockages in communication. And for months, devotees were waiting for me to come back to help resolve it. It was a very critical issue, and I took it very seriously, as they did. So I returned to New Vrindavan, and there was a North American GBC and Temple President's leadership meeting where all the leaders of America come to New Vrindavan to discuss. That was for 3 days. I'm sorry, 2 days. And then after that, there was the Festival of Inspiration, where devotees from all over America come, where there's so many seminars and kirtans and lectures and dramas. It's the biggest festival of the year of this sort in America.